Well, today, Michelle and I are going to get the chance to tell you about our trip to India. We spent a little over a week in the city of Mumbai, and that picture you see right there is pretty typical of what you see. There is a great contrast throughout the city. There will be high-rise apartments, and then right below it, there will be slums. And it's the children are not supposed to be dismissed yet. So, it's a city of great contrast, and that's one of the first things that hit us. So I'm going to introduce a little bit about our trip, and then Michelle's going to come up and share some of her experiences. Just so you know, Mumbai is right against the coast. It's on the west coast of India. It is a peninsula. It's surrounded by water, and it's a huge city. The population is estimated somewhere between 20 and 25 million people. So that is more than double the entire population of North Carolina in one city. So it's just hard to imagine how cramped these people are. It seems like everywhere you go, people are back to back and shoulder to shoulder, and they're just stuffed in there somehow. So with that many people, it's hard to imagine the needs that are there, spiritually and physically. But it's a huge city, and we had a wonderful time being there. This is typical of kind of what you'll see in the city. This is typical of some of the living conditions that people have. And this is, honestly, this is a little more mid-level. So this is the typical sight you'll see walking down the road in Mumbai. Here's another house that we saw that we were able to take a picture of. And you can see at the bottom of the screen there's some water. And they will be washing clothes and everything else there in that water. So it's kind of hard for us to imagine, really, what their day is like on a day-to-day basis. Here's just another picture. You can see in the background there's a taller building, and most of the buildings, even the larger buildings that look nice from a distance, if you get up close to them, you see that they're kind of like that one. They don't get much upkeep. They build them, and then they just sit there. And so they might look nice from a distance, but in reality, nothing is kept up very well, and it's just kind of dirty. That's just kind of the best word to describe the surroundings of the city. This is a typical toilet. Michelle was not happy to see this. But this is what's known as a squatty potty. And so you squat and you do your business and then you're done. But so this is typical. Again, and I think we tend to take so much for granted here. But even just something as small as a toilet, it's a very big eye-opener when you get over there and see what their conditions are like. And as you can see from this picture, there's just trash everywhere. People walk around it, they walk on it, the animals are in it and on it all the time. It's just part of their life. They don't even think about it. They just live there among it, and they're used to it. This is a picture that kind of tells you what the traffic in Mumbai is like. The rearview mirror, the side mirror that you see there, that's on our rickshaw, which is basically a motorcycle with a carriage over top of it with a two-person seat in the back, no doors or windows. And that's how we got around most of the time while we were there. We were riding rickshaws. And so you see the side of our rickshaw, and then you see a large passenger bus next to us. And we're both going forward. And then you see this motorcycle that's trying to come this way. And he did. He went right in between us somehow. And so for any of you, if you've ever played video games like Mario Kart or some racing game, that's what it's like. There are no rules. You just go and you squeeze in where you can and you keep your arms in so that you don't get hit by anything else. So that was definitely interesting. Nobody had warned us about that when we signed up for the trip. We were a little worried the first time we got in a rickshaw. And then the animals as well. This is a typical street. You'll see cows and pigs and water buffaloes and dogs and cats and everything just walking the streets. And you can see over on the side there's some trash. And this is how the animals survive. They find food in the trash and they sleep on the ground and they survive that way. But the thing about India is that there are so many Hindus who believe that these animals are sacred that you would get in big, big trouble if you tried to hurt one of these cows or tried to kill them or anything like that. And so they're just everywhere. And you'll be crossing the street and you'll have to wait for the cows and the cars have to wait for the cows and everything else. It's just very different, again, from what we're used to. So that's just kind of a very brief overview of what a typical day is like in Mumbai. Needless to say, it's much different than what we're used to. But this is what we were exposed to for a week, and we loved it. And we loved the people, and we grew to have a great appreciation for them and their culture. So I think now I'm going to let Michelle come up now and share a little bit about her experiences from day to day.
Okay. So my job the week while we were in India was actually to teach piano, which was fun because I don't play piano. So that was really interesting. The women's group was led by a professor at Southeastern who is a music professor. She's very talented. She actually wrote the textbook that we took with us to use, and she told me it would be fine, no big deal. If you can read music, you'll be good. And so I read music, obviously, and so I practiced. I borrowed Courtney's keyboard weeks before we left, and every night I'd get home from work and play piano. So that was really interesting. Didn't really know any of the details. This was my first mission trip. Nobody ever told me that it's so kind of disorganized, and I mean, maybe they aren't all that way, but I had no clue what I was going to be doing. And so the first day we kind of hit the ground running. They told us right away, there were six of us, one of my group being the professor. I thought I was going to be with her all week. They told me right away we were going to be split. The first day they sent me and one other student, Audra, who was actually a seminary student, away from the rest of the group. So the rest of the group stayed with Chris and the guys in the same church building they were in, and we traveled an hour and a half in a rickshaw across town in the heat right away to this tiny, tiny little church, which is what you see up here. The doors are painted blue, and this little girl, she was so precious, she kind of popped in the picture, and I was like, well, I'm just going to leave her there. I didn't take another one. So this church is a tiny little room. I'll show you. Oops, wrong one. These are some of the kids outside. We were kind of celebrities there. From the moment we arrived in our taxi, our rickshaw, these children waited for us every day. The first day they saw us, they were so excited. I don't know, because they've had past experiences with Americans or British or something like that, but they pretty much worshiped the ground we walked on. It was very hard, very sad to see, but they would wait for us every day, and they were so excited. They would follow us from the street all the way to the church, and they would stand outside all day. I mean, we're talking like 8 hours in the heat. They wouldn't move from the door. They'd punch each other and hit each other and try to get closer to us. They didn't really come in. Some of them, by the end of the week, would get really brave, and they would actually come in the church and stand by us. They didn't speak any English. They couldn't understand anything I was saying to them, but they loved every minute of it, and that was really special for me. I was trying to show you. There it is. Okay, so this is what the church looked like on the inside. You see, it's very different from what we have. And most of the churches there are like this. They don't have air conditioning. This one was lucky enough to have ceiling fans, and you can see it's still decorated from Christmas and New Year's. There's no bathroom, no sink, no anything like that. There's a floor. They were very lucky. They borrowed these chairs. These aren't chairs that they normally have there. They sit on the ground. But they borrowed these chairs so that we would have them for our keyboards. So this is where we sat up all week. We would get there about 11 o'clock, and we would teach for like 3 hours, take a break, we would ride a rickshaw to lunch, and then come back and teach for like another 3 hours before we headed back the hour and a half to the hotel. So here's another picture of the kids outside. I loved these because all of my students, we went in thinking we were going to be teaching non-believers, which I was kind of nervous about. That was a big deal. I'd never done anything like this before. And then we get there and realize that the pastor at our church had only invited church members. And I don't know why he had done that, but so we were teaching young children, which I was excited about too, because I love to work with kids, and I kind of thought we were going to be working with older people, but they were children, and they spoke English, some of them better than others. I said some pretty crazy things, and I'm pretty sure they didn't understand half of what was coming out of my mouth, but yeah, they enjoyed it. But these are the kids outside, some of the ones that stayed out there that didn't speak any English. And it turned out to be a pretty cool thing. We kind of had to work on the pastor all week about letting them in the church. It's very different than here. Here, of course, we're going to welcome anyone inside who wants to come inside. And I don't know, I think it was pretty much he was scared. He was very fearful of the Hindu beliefs and of what would happen if some of these Hindu children converted, what would happen with their families or their religious leaders or things like that. But it ended up being good. By the end of the week, we were able to invite some of them in, and some of them made professions of faith, and it was awesome. I've never experienced anything like it in my life, like never felt the Holy Spirit at work like I did, you know. And all week, you know, we'd get into a moment like that. We would teach them the gospel. We would tell them the gospel. The pastor would translate for us. And I would just put my head down, and I couldn't think of anything to pray. I was like, all I could think was, God, move. And I would say it over and over, God, move. Move, God, just move. And he would. I mean, it was just insane. The faith these people have, just like that. They don't need to see it. They don't need to hear it. They just believe it. I mean, that was probably the biggest thing I learned. You know, Chris is going to tell you a little bit, you know, some crazier stories about healings and things like that. And, you know, I tend to be so doubtful. If I heard something like that here, I'd be like, oh, well, they just said that. You know, they just wanted us to think that happened. But, I mean, it happens every day. Our God is so great. I mean, he can move mountains. Of course he can have these kids believe in him. Of course they can have a relationship with him. Of course he can heal these people. So it was really, I don't know, it's life-changing. If any of you ever had the opportunity to do something like that, it's just so huge. It was just eye-opening. So here's a few of my students. I'm not going to say any of their names just for their safety. But these were three of the girls that came all week. They were there every day, and they kind of just showed up whenever they wanted to. It wasn't like, they don't really have a schedule in India. It's just kind of like, oh, I feel like coming now, so I'll come now. So sometimes I would have more than one at a time, and that was rough. And these two girls were cousins, and so they were really funny because they would fight, just like, you know, your kids might fight here over who got to play next and that kind of thing. This is one of my older students. She was 18, and she was very faithful. She was probably the one that picked up the easiest. Like, she could literally, you know, we left the keyboards with the missionaries that we worked with to kind of use as tools to do what we did, to teach people about Jesus, to present the gospel, and she is probably the one who will put that into practice. I was really excited to show her. We had these things called Evangel Cubes. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but basically they move and open, and they give you a way to present the gospel, and Chris will probably go over that a little bit more, but we had tiny little cards that we sent home with them, which is what I'm going over with her right here. And she was so great about it. I would give her homework. I'd say, tonight your homework is to go home, go wherever, and tell three people about Jesus. I was like, I don't care who they are. I don't care if you know them. I don't care if you don't know them. You know, your friends in school, your neighbors, whoever, I want you to do it. And every night she did it. She came back. She would bring them with her. She'd be like, these are the three people that I told. I mean, can you imagine if we would all do that, if we would go home and find three people every day and bring them to church? Just imagine what would happen. I mean, these people, I mean, you tell them and they put it into practice. It's amazing. But I was so proud of her. I mean, just every day, and she was so helpful. She would help translate for the other students that didn't speak English that were taking piano. This little girl is so cute. I'll say her name because it probably doesn't matter. This is Gia. And she was precious. She was the little sister of one of the kids that came all week, and she would just kind of wander in by herself. You see how tiny she is. Kids just kind of, I don't know where her parents were, but she, you know, you would see them in the streets. We'd be flying by in rickshaws, and there'd be a little, like, two-year-old just standing in the middle of the road, no one around them. And you can't stop. I mean, it was just insane. So she would just kind of come in all the time. This is one of my students translating for Audra, the blonde right there, as she presents the gospel to these girls. And I think every single one of those girls made professions of faith, and they really lived it out that week. I mean, it was new to them, but there's such excitement. You know, they learn about it, they make this profession, and then they're all about it. They're bold. They want to go out and tell people. You know, they want everyone to know. These are her hands. She had painted them. There was a festival the Thursday that we were there. I would see these on all the students, and I would keep trying to ask them what it was, and they would just get so tickled and laugh at me. I don't know why, but but she finally told me that she had painted hers for the festival, and she painted them. She had to hold them like this for hours to let it dry. Whatever dye they use, you can't touch anything. And so even though she had let them dry forever, it kept coming off on the keyboard when she was playing, and she felt so bad. This is another little girl from the street. She's lucky. She's fully clothed. She has shoes on. A lot of them would have shirts, nothing else, just a shirt that would stand out there all day. But she came in, and she just slid over right by the door there, and she just stared at us. She didn't smile. She didn't say anything. And I guess the pastor felt sorry for her because she was so little, and she was just standing there. And so he started asking her what she wanted, and she said, I just came in for chocolate. And I was like, wow, this is a good friend for me because I love chocolate. And unfortunately, I didn't have any, but I noticed that one of my students that had been there all week had been bouncing this coin in her lap the whole time. And I didn't know what it was. I had told her she could lay it down if she wanted to. And she was like, no, it's okay. And so when she realized what was going on, she called one of the little boys from outside and she gave him the coin and said something to him. And he ran and got the little girl chocolate and brought it back. And her whole face just lit up. It was so cute. So that was really, really sweet of my student. These are the girls from outside that made professions of faith. As you can see, most of them don't smile. I get really excited. I was like, smile for the picture. We smile in America, but for some reason they don't do that there. But it was really exciting, and they were there every day, and they would come in and just start chattering to me in Hindi, and I'd be like, okay. Yeah, I had no idea what they were saying, but they didn't care. They, you know, they knew my name. They learned my name really quick. They could say, what is your name? And they would say it just like that because that's all they'd learned. And I'd say, my name is Michelle. And so all week you'd hear them outside going, Michelle, Michelle, Michelle. And mine, I don't know, the other girls were Jennifer and Audra, but they couldn't figure out, they couldn't do those names. For some reason, my name was easy for them. So I would hear it all the time. And I would try to learn their names so hard, but you ask them what their name is and they're like, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, okay. So I was just like, hi. And the only other English they knew, they could say America. They would say it like that. And they knew Yeshua, which Chris, you know, it's Jesus, but he says it a little different. My kids were saying Yeshua. And the only reason they knew that when, you know, after we'd gone over the Cuban stuff was because they had seen the Jesus film. 2 years ago, the church had shown the Jesus film and invited these kids off the street, and they remembered. They knew the whole story. They're Hindu. They don't have a relationship with Jesus, but they knew the story. And as soon as I started showing the pictures, they knew. I mean, they would point, and they would just start chattering about it. And, you know, he would tell me that they're talking about Jesus, and they're talking about how he died on the cross. Okay, so this is my last picture. I just thought I'd put this one in because I thought it was funny. This is pretty much how I felt about the food all week. I don't even know what that stuff is right there, but yeah. That was pretty interesting. I got to experience a vegetarian restaurant all week because the pastor knew that one of the girls was vegetarian, and so he took us to the same restaurant every day with the Squatty Potty, and I don't know what I ate. He ordered for us, and it just plopped on my plate, and I was like, okay. So, yeah. So it was good. But Chris is going to tell you a little bit more about some of the gospel presentations and things that he did.
Yeah. And the children are now dismissed. So, yeah, unless they want to stick around, they're dismissed. But, yeah, as Michelle said, we were kind of separated all week. I didn't really see her during the day at all. My team, we were with a team that worked with a group of local pastors. Every day we had 12 to 15 local pastors, and we would meet in a room, and we would train them in basic discipleship and in church multiplication. We would teach them from a lesson plan called the Basic Commands of Jesus. And it's something very simple that you can take and you can learn and you can teach it to someone else the very next day. So we wanted this to be very reproducible so that they could, as soon as they learned it, go ahead and share it with someone else and start multiplying churches in the city. And so that's what we did all week. This is a picture of me with some of the kids in one of the slums. And you can't really see it, but back behind where those clothes are hanging is a house. Me and my friend went there one day to teach them, a group of believers. There was a little church that met in one of the houses there. And we taught them the basic commands of Jesus and some of the discipleship stuff. And it was very humbling. And I learned a lot from those people. But there were 29 people in a room, you know, maybe a quarter of the size of this stage. And there are 29 people sitting on the floor in the heat for 4 hours to listen to two American guys who didn't really know what they were doing. But it was just very humbling because you could tell that they were eager to hear the word and they wanted to know more. And you know, I just think, how many times can we not get people to show up here in our nice air-conditioned buildings once a week? And this is a weekday afternoon, and they sat on the floor for 4 hours. So that really touched me. This is a picture of the kids were all attracted by me. I guess it's because I'm tall and white, and they were amused. But this is a group of students who had just gotten off a school bus. And I had some tracks, so I was handing them out to them. But school is very important there. One thing that we were kind of shocked to learn, just in the week that we were there in the city, there were around 15 suicides of teenagers and young adults who were trying to pass their exams. And in just 1 week, that's a crazy number to me. But there's so much pressure on them, because if they don't pass their exams for the year, they don't move on. And so they know if they don't pass their exam that they're stuck there in the life that they've always known. And so it was important that we be able to share with some of these students and give them the hope that they obviously don't have. But 15 suicides in 1 week just of students, that blew my mind. I want to share with you a couple short stories. I want you to hear these stories in particular because we could tell you about the numbers of people we met, and we could tell you about the numbers of people who came to know Christ, and I guess I will. There were about 75 people who came to know Christ that week while we were there, and about 75 more who were trained and equipped to share their faith. So that was amazing. But more than just numbers tend to run together and tend to be kind of vague. And if all you know about is numbers, you won't care as much. But I want you to hear about some specific people that we met while we were there so that you can have a face and a name and be able to pray for these believers. This boy in the middle here, he worked at our hotel where we were staying. And on Tuesday night, some of us had gone out to the dirt road right along the hotel, and we were trying to share. We were using the Evangel Cube, and we had our tracks, and we were trying to share with some of the children who lived in the slum right behind our hotel. They would walk home down the dirt road, and we would try to share with them. And just because there was a handful of white people on the road, everybody was very interested in what was going on. So there were a lot of people coming out just to see what the commotion was. And this boy came walking by, and I stopped him because he looked kind of curious about what was happening. I stopped him and handed him one of the tracts. And it was in Hindi, his local language. So he was able to read it. And I tried my best to point to the pictures and, ask him to follow along with the words. And I tried using hand motions and all this stuff. And I could tell that he was interested. And he was reading along, and he had this look on his face like, this is serious, whatever this is. But it was frustrating because I got to the point where I couldn't say anything else. It was so frustrating. But that's one of those situations where we really just had to trust God and say, I can't do this, so you do something. And then the other guy here in the picture with me, his name is Chris as well. He's another student from Southeastern. And about that time, he came along and he tried to share some with this boy as well. And so we were both doing our best to share with him, and he was understanding a little bit. But there was a local pastor who happened to be with us at the time, and he could speak English. And he had been in a little shack across the road from our hotel where a Muslim family lived. And they had heard the commotion, wanted to know what was going on. And so one of my professors from Southeastern and this pastor went and introduced themselves. And the pastor was speaking to them about Jesus. And he learned that they were Muslims. And he began to share the gospel with them. And he looked at my professor and he said, "They're interested." And my professor said, "Okay, well, keep sharing." So he shared a little more, and he was like, "They're very interested." And he was like, "Well, keep going." And so he eventually led this whole Muslim family to Christ. While the Islamic call to prayer was going off throughout the city, these people were praying to receive Christ. So anyway, the local pastor had just walked out of their house about the time we were trying to share with this young boy. And so we grabbed him, and we said, "Please, can you come over here and talk to this kid? Because we can't do it anymore." And he did. And he made sure he understood the gospel, and he led him to receive Christ. So that was very cool. But the coolest thing was that the very next day, when I was coming home from my training sessions, I began to walk up the dirt road to the hotel, and I heard somebody calling my name. And it was this kid. And he was standing there with one of his friends, and they had gotten some of our tracts, and they were handing them out. And just to see him, he's a believer less than 24 hours. And here he was in a place where persecution is real. And he was trying his best to share. So that was very encouraging. So please remember this boy in your prayers. And then the last story I want to share is about this man. You can tell he's a short man. I kind of look like a giant next to him. But this man is one of the local pastors. And one of the afternoons after we had been teaching the training sessions, we wanted to go out into the communities with them and help them share the gospel so that they could really put this stuff into practice, because we told them, you can learn this all you want, but until you put it into practice, it's not going to make a difference. So we wanted to go with them and help them to do that. And I got paired up with this man, and honestly, I wasn't sure what to expect, because he was quiet. He didn't have very outgoing personality, and he's very small, and so I just didn't really know what to expect from him as we headed out to share the gospel in the community. But before we even left the parking lot of the building where we met, he turned to me and he said, "We're going to conquer this area." And I was like, "Yes, that's awesome." And I was like, "Yes, we will. I completely agree." But inside, honestly, I was a little, skeptical. I mean, honestly, when we go out sharing here in America, that's not our experience most of the time. We don't conquer the area. And so I was happy that he was this fired up, but I was just kind of wondering what would really happen. And so we walked a little farther. We were going a couple miles away. And when we walked a little farther, and he turned to me again, and he said, "We will have victory in Jesus Christ." And I was like, this is awesome. This guy has faith. I mean, he is fired up. And so we kept walking, and finally we got right to the place where we were going to start sharing. And he turned to me once more, and he said, "We are soldiers of Jesus." And that just blows my mind, I mean, why don't we have that attitude? Why not? We worship the same God, and he is just as powerful here as he is in India. And I saw God do amazing things through that man that day. I saw physical healings. I saw a woman who was demon-possessed, and her demon was cast out, and she received Christ. Things that honestly I was skeptical about, things that we don't see here. But it was real there, and those pastors understood it. And those pastors may not have the training that our pastors have. They may not be seminary educated, but as far as on-the-job experience, they've got us whooped. And they believe in prayer, and they believe in the gospel. And I think it's because of that that God did such great things that day. I saw this man share the gospel with probably 10 people, and almost all of them received Christ. And he was sad when we told him it was time to leave. We were like, we got to go and meet our group. And he's like, "No." We said, "Yeah, but we'll come back." And so we did. And we went out several more days sharing. And every day this man had that same type of confidence and that same faith. And it was just very challenging to me because we don't display that here. And we wonder why we don't see the results that we want to see. God blesses our obedience and our faithfulness. And that was really made obvious to me that day. So that day marked me for life, and I pray that I will always exhibit, that type of confidence and that type of faith in the gospel and in the God who sends us to this world. So I wanted to share those stories with you so that you have specific people in mind and specific stories about what God is doing in India, because he's on the move. I mean, 75 people in 1 week. That's amazing. And so we need to be in prayer for the country. We need to be in prayer for David and Patty and for those they'll be working with. Because it's exciting and great things are happening. And if we neglect to pray for these believers, then we're at fault. Because we know, so now we're held responsible to pray for them. So I challenge us all to do that. So we're going to sing a closing song together here. We're going to sing "Give Us Clean Hands." And as we sing together, I just want us to really think about some of these things that me and Michelle saw and what we would like to see happen here at our church and in our community. And I want us to pray for the faith and for the guidance to live it out and to see these things happen.